thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips and chat, just catch the full show, plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m, with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m, with new episodes every other week. But for now, enjoy the Happy Hour podcast. Hey, it's the Happy Hour, your mix of music, well-being and conversations around sight loss and mental health.
Paulina and Holly once again with you, and today's episode is all about starting and returning to college and university.
So stick around and enjoy our first track on today's Happy Hour. And what a coincidence, it's Happy Hour by the House Martins. You're listening to The Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. Holly Tuke here, and I'm joined by my co-host, Paulina.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show today. And since it's September and colleges and universities are back in session, well, we'll be focusing on just that.
Yep, I'll be speaking with visually impaired student Charlotte Milburn about her experience of university. Ellie Marsh will give us some tips on starting university and the support that's available. And we'll have something from Paulina.
I'll be hearing about Mindspace 24/7, and they've had a recent collaboration that is making access to qualified counselors easily accessible to students in colleges. So that one is coming later in the show, but for now we're going to hear the 70s rock classic from Bruce Springsteen. Here it is. Sprung from cages on highway, man, chrome wheel, fuel injected, and stepping out over the line. Oh, maybe this town rips the bones from your back. It's a death trap. It's a suicide rap. We gotta get out while we're young. 'Cause tramps like us, baby, we were born to run. Moving to university can be a very daunting task, so our Ellie Marsh has been finding out some top tips on how you can settle in, get to know people, and most importantly, enjoy yourself. Here she is.
Starting university can be one of the most exciting times of your life, but it can also be one of the scariest, especially if you have a disability. But do not fear, because we have our very own University Disability Advisor Lucy Lax here from the University of Sunderland to help us navigate our way through Freshers Week and beyond. Lucy, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us again.
So university can be a really scary place when you first start. It's, you know, big buildings, big lecture theatres, daunting spaces. What would be your first piece of advice for somebody starting this September?
So obviously, Freshers Week and starting university is a really exciting time. But also mixed with that excitement can be nerves, apprehension, you know, worries about making friends. So what I would tell anyone is, bear in mind, everyone's in the same boat. Often you can feel a little bit isolated, maybe, but you will not be the only one. And chances are everyone that you're walking past is feeling exactly the same things that you are. There's lots of things to do in Freshers Week, and it can feel a little bit overwhelming. You don't have to do everything. No one's expecting you to turn up for every event, every outing, every night out. That's not the way it works. You just do the things that you want to do, and you don't have to attend everything that's on offer.
And there is lots of things that happen during Freshers Week. A big thing, obviously, is going out and drinking and things like that. But for a lot of people, that's not really what they're interested in. And whether they don't really like drinking alcohol, whether they don't really like going out, maybe they feel anxious about being in nightclubs, especially after the pandemic, you know, being tightly packed in a room with other strangers. It can be a little bit daunting. But there's loads of other stuff that comes along with Freshers Week as well, isn't there? Loads of other events that take place.
Absolutely. You know, there's something for everyone at university, and that might be different sport groups, different arts and creative groups. There's so many different societies that students can join, where you'll meet other people who have the same interests as you, and they'll do lots of different kinds of social events, different, you know, meetings, outings, trips. If you don't like going out to clubs and pubs, you know, there'll be so many other opportunities to do things and meet people. You know, I think universities realise and are moving away from that kind of culture a lot now as well. You know, not everyone wants to do that. Not everyone wants to, you know, just meet people in that way. So there's a whole host of other things for people to do. And, you know, if you are feeling a bit overwhelmed and, you know, you just want to have a chat to someone, maybe you're feeling nervous, maybe you're feeling a bit scared about how to meet people, there will be support services at the university as well. And we know all the difficulties that people have when they start. And maybe they're away from home as well, you know, which can add to that sense of nerves and excitement. But, you know, there'll be lots of people that you can ask for support from. Often there's student ambassadors around as well, and they are really, really good at just sensing when people might need a little bit of support and a little bit of help. And they can, you know, spend some time with you and help you get your orientation of where you're meant to be and where you're meant to go, as well as, you know, helping you access some services if they think you might need it.
And the great thing about student ambassadors is that they were in your position not that long ago as well. They know what it's like to be a fresher. In terms of accessibility then, what can people do to make sure that they're in the best position possible for when they actually start their lectures?
When it comes to your academic side of things, we would always advise students to get in touch with any of the support services before they start. And that just means that they can get any support and any adjustments and any accommodations you needed in place right for the start of your lectures. Now, if you haven't done that, don't worry. There is no deadline for anyone reaching out to those services. So please don't feel like you've missed the boat. You haven't. Just get in touch with the support services. It could be the disability support team. It could be the wellbeing team. Either one will be able to kind of put you in the right direction to getting in place whatever support you need in order for you to learn in the way that you need to. Now, that might be anything from, you know, recording lectures to having information sent to you in a different way. Part of that might be your disabled students allowance as well, if you're eligible for that. Now, again, if you haven't applied for that already, don't worry. Again, there's no deadline for it. So if you need a bit of help in applying, your disability support team can help you to do that. Everything you can do online as well, and you can fill in the forms, you know, via your portal, via the student finance website. But please don't feel that you're stuck. You know, there's people there to help you. And, you know, we can get that support in place as soon as possible. So don't feel like you're just stuck with what you got. You haven't at all. We can always make changes to anything you need.
And that's the same the whole way through university, isn't it? Not just the first few weeks.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, for whatever reason, you know, students get kind of carried away with what they're doing and meeting new people and having fun and enjoying the course. And, you know, 6 months down the line, just think, oh, gosh, I didn't apply for that disabled students allowance that I needed. Don't worry. Whether you apply 6 months later or even in your final year, you know, it can still be sorted out for you. All I'd say is just make sure that, you know, you let someone know. And if you're having any difficulties with getting evidence together or knowing what kind of form to fill in, there's people there to help you.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Lucy, for all your advice and expertise over the last few months. And best of luck to everybody starting university in this September. I am eternally jealous.
Yes, definitely. Make sure you have fun, people. University is about learning, but it's also about having fun. So make sure you get a good balance of both.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining me, Lucy.
Oh, thanks very much.
Ellie Marsh there with that interview. It takes me back to my time at university, both as a student and also a member of staff. I have actually been an assistive technology advisor at a university for the last
3.5 years, I've now moved on to another role within the charity sector. But it really kind of highlighted to me the importance of speaking up for yourself and being open about what you want. It can often be really nerve-wracking, but everyone is there to support you.
Because that's the thing, if you're, I guess, a fresher and you're just starting uni, everything might seem very overwhelming. So it might seem like you're asking for a lot, but you're really not. You're just asking for some support, which is exactly what people like Lucy, who was speaking there, are for. They're there to support you and make the university experience the best one you can have.
And I think the thing to remember as well is that they want to support you and they want to make your university experience a memorable one and a time of your life that's enjoyable.
So there you go. If you ever feel unsure, just reach out to the support services. Or, you know, if you ever have any questions, I'm sure Holly can give you some advice. Holly, what's your social media?
Oh, not again. I will always try to offer some advice when I can. You can reach out to me on Facebook and Instagram, which is just Life of a Blind Girl, or on Twitter, Life of a Blind Girl, but without the I in girl.
So it's Life of a Blind Girl.
Yeah, you got it in one.
Pretty much. So we still have more coming up on your happy hour today. Holly is going to be chatting with Charlotte Milburn, who's also going to share her experience. But before all of that, we're going to take you back to the 90s with The Cars and this one.
University can be a daunting but exciting time of our lives. We may experience a range of emotions when it comes to moving away from home, making new friends, balancing the workload and overall university life. Charlotte Milburn is a recent visually impaired graduate from York St John University. Thanks so much for joining me on the Happy Hour, Charlotte.
That's all right.
Can you tell us a bit about the course you studied and why you chose that particular course?
So I studied education studies with special educational needs and inclusion. And I picked the course because I've always kind of wanted to go into education. I wasn't too sure about whether that would be teaching within a classroom or whether it would be in a recreational setting. So I just thought I'd do, I picked that degree because it kind of gave me, it kind of like opened the door to other sectors I could go into. And it's kind of made me realize that I can go into a lot more different things apart from just, you know, teaching in the classroom or being a teacher assistant or working in a school, because education happens nearly everywhere. So and especially the special educational needs side, it kind of opened up lots of different pathways to other disabilities. Obviously I'm familiar with visual impairment, but learning about other disabilities and how to cater for them as well.
Did you find that it broadened your knowledge when it came to learning about other disabilities?
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think the modules that we did, it kind of gave you the choice to focus on other disabilities. So there was somewhere we had to focus on, say, autism spectrum disorder or dyslexia, but we could also choose for other modules. So we could choose to kind of focus in on, say, hearing impairments or other like speech and language difficulties. And the course gave me the opportunity to learn British Sign Language, which I've wanted to learn for a long time. So yeah, it was really great to learn that and kind of learn a bit more about hearing impairments.
As someone with a vision impairment yourself, what was the experience like of learning British Sign Language? Was it accessible or were there some challenges?
To be honest, I wasn't too sure how it was going to work out when I first started the module. I spoke to my course lead before I started the module, and we were kind of saying we don't know how it's going to work, how the teaching's going to go, and how the assessment's going to go as well. And it was quite a just kind of trial and error, just kind of seeing what worked and what didn't. I was quite lucky because the lecturer that took us for the module was really good. He was really, really helpful. And because I've got some useful vision, he was able to just do the sign in front of me. And I was able to copy and learn that way. Also, my friends in the class were really helpful. So if I was doing something incorrectly, they'd help me along the way. And because the assessment was practical, so it was all just about kind of going a little bit slower and taking the time and just making sure that we were in a well-lit room and things like that. But it was more accessible for me because I just took it at my own pace, and it was all down to the lecturer really, because he was really helpful.
It's really nice to hear that you were supported in doing that rather than it being dismissed because of your vision impairment.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it was a conversation that me and my course lead had, and she was not worried, but she was just curious as to how it was going to work. And I was given two timetables. I was given a timetable for the British Sign Language class and for the other module. And I was told that I could go to the other module just to see how the comparison would work and how British Sign Language would work and how the other module would be. But I just went to the British Sign Language class and I thought, oh, this can work. So I just kind of went with that, and I really enjoyed the module in the end.
How did you manage any stress or anxiety that you experienced during your time at university?
So it depended on what was happening. I had some problems with my DSA before I went to uni, and then I had problems throughout my time at university. And before I've went to uni, I've done a lot of sport in my time. So I've done dance and cheer and cycling and things like that. So when I went to university, I joined some clubs and societies, and that really helped me to kind of forget about any stresses that I was going through with uni work or anything like that. I had a specialist support worker that I got paired with through my DSA, and I found she was really, really helpful, not just at helping me with my work and proofreading my work and things like that, but also just to chat to, because she was outside of the university. I'd see her once a week or once every 2 weeks. Spoke to me a lot about stresses of university life, but also connecting with other VI students at the university and further afield. We all go through quite similar stresses, so just speaking to everybody about what we're going through, and just kind of sharing experiences.
The social aspect of university can be quite daunting, especially when making new friends. Did your vision impairment play a factor in this, or were people really accepting and understanding?
I think university is kind of a place where people are very accepting. And especially from my experiences, I had a really, really positive experience. I remember on the first day when I was in my flat with all my new flatmates, I was really anxious on how I was going to tell people about my sight loss and how it was going to come across to them. But I was in a flat of six girls, and we all got on really well, and they were all really accepting of it. I felt it was really easy to tell them, although it was stressful at the time. I then felt a weight off my shoulders when I told them, and they were just really accepting. And I think the key thing that I told them was, if you have any questions, please feel free to ask. You don't need to assume, just ask me and I won't be offended. And we would just have chats about it. And yeah, I think I think it was different with my course mates, because they could see that I had enlarged papers and stuff like that. But I think it's just opening up the conversation and kind of saying, I'm not afraid for you to ask questions if you're comfortable with people asking questions. But yeah, I felt being open to friends and meeting new people, and especially with like sports and societies, I think it's also important to be open there as well, because otherwise people won't know how best to help you, and I think it's when you're open people can help you the most.
Yeah, definitely. And it can make it more accessible as well, can't it?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think, well, once I told, because I was on the cheer team, and once I told them and the committee and the people who were running the club, it felt so much better because we kind of found ways. If I was struggling with something, then we could find ways in which it could be adapted, and stuff like that. So it makes it so much more accessible.
You've mentioned the support you received through DSA and how lecturers supported you. But overall, did you feel supported throughout your time at university?
From the university, yes, I'd say so, because I had a really good course lead, and the team within the education department were really good overall. I mean, it depended on the different lecturers. Some lecturers better than others, and some lecturers, even though you tell them about 25 times that you can't enlarge something onto A3 paper, it doesn't work for them, and they don't quite grasp the concept of enlarging stuff. So I think some lecturers are definitely better than others, but my course lead was really good, and if I ever had a problem, I just kind of email her and say, I have a problem with this module, I can't do this. Or a lot of the time, actually, I had a problem with Moodle. That's how we like accessed all the course materials, and sometimes something wasn't accessible. So I'd email her and say, this isn't accessible, I can't get onto it. And she'd go around, try and sort it all out, and come back with something and come back to me with an answer. And there was also quite a lot of the times that, because I had extensions, my Moodle link wasn't correct and I couldn't submit my assignments. But with an email, it was fine. I think it's just being proactive. You got to be proactive in order to get things the way that you want them. Some people would say it's not fair, but unfortunately, especially like within the world that we're in, it's just kind of being on top of it, and it is one of those little extra things, but it would only take me about half an hour each week, I'd say, to make sure everything was okay and accessible. But yeah, I mean, I had some problems with my DSA, but the uni were quite good at kind of helping me to sort that out. But yeah, I think in general the uni were good with accessibility, and it was just the problems that I had elsewhere with other companies with the support that they provided.
You've now graduated. How is life as a graduate?
It's different. It's because obviously my third year was during the pandemic. I was at home a lot, and there wasn't too much of me living in York because of the lockdowns, and it was better for me to just stay at home. I have been at home for quite a lot recently, and then when my tenancy ended in York, I have moved back to home now. But it's just a case of finding a job. I think it's very daunting, and but there's quite a lot of advice out there for VI students specifically on finding work. I've done a few workshops about finding jobs and just kind of the next steps after university, really. So yeah, it is a bit daunting, but I've tried to enjoy the summer when the weather has allowed, because obviously we can't go away. So yeah, I think it's just a case of now getting my head down and trying to find work.
It's great to hear that you felt supported with advice and workshops out there after university life, because it's a huge step, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of my friends who aren't VI say, you know, it's a big step, and you know, take your time, don't rush. But I think with a VI, you obviously have that extra stress of, oh, is the workplace going to be accessible for me? Am I going to be able to do this to the best of my ability? Are the employers going to be understanding of my sight loss? It's all them extra stresses. So yeah, I think finding the right advice and you know, speaking with the right people, speaking with people who have been through what you're going through currently, is a really good move to make.
You've shared quite a few tips already, but if you had one top tip for any blind or visually impaired students going on to university, what would it be?
I think I'd say communication is key. And you've got to put out there what you need. University is, you know, a bit different from college or sixth form or school, in the way that you need to speak up for yourself more. And it's all about saying what you need, because there might be another student with a disability who needs similar needs to you, but it's all about saying what you need specifically. Because otherwise, if you don't communicate, people aren't going to be aware and aren't going to know what you need. So it's all about speaking up for yourself and having the confidence to say what you need and what will make things accessible for you.
That's such great advice. It's been wonderful to chat to you, and we wish you all the best with your job search, and congratulations again on graduating university.
Thank you.
You're listening to R&IB Connect Radio. It's your happy hour show with Holly and Paulina. And next up, Paulina will be finding out about a service that can help students with 24/7 access to mental health support. But before that, we're going to hear a track that myself and Paulina absolutely love. It's The Weeknd and Ariana Grande.
I saw you dancing in a crowded room. You look so happy when I'm not with you. But then you saw me, caught you by surprise. A single teardrop falling from your eyes.
Over 1 million students at further education colleges in the UK will now have access to mental health support, thanks to a collaboration with IPS Limited and online therapy service Mindspace 24/7. Thanks to the collaboration, an ID card can be topped up by parents for students with payment for courses, food, and now access to 24/7 online counselling. And this comes after one of the most challenging years for students in history. Co-founder of Mindspace 24/7, Guy Altrim, joins me on the happy hour to tell us more. It is great to have you here, Guy.
Hello, it's lovely to be here and lovely to be able to share what we're trying to do with these students.
So as I said, this collaboration, it couldn't have come at a better time, because last year was so incredibly tough on everyone, but especially on students.
Absolutely. Pre-COVID, the students were having difficulties, as they always do. You know, their journey through their student life can be fraught and it can be a little unnerving for them. But of course, with COVID coming about, and the colleges shutting down, having to work from home, being online, a lot of different types of concerns, shall we say, presented themselves, which made life that much more difficult for them.
And now you have that extra anxiety of, I guess, things are opening up and students might feel a bit odd about coming back to college after feeling isolated. And now they're going to find themselves in larger groups, and that can also cause issues and worries and extra stress.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like they're going back into the unknown. They've probably got comfortable now, with a little bit more comfortable with the way they've been working. And now they're going to be back with, as you say, larger groups, certainly first year students who may won't even know the people they're meeting. And it brings different challenges. And, you know, we're here really to help support them through their not just the beginning of their student life, but the whole journey.
So how did this collaboration come about? You do offer online counseling, but this is a little bit different. You're almost making your service a bit more accessible to students in need.
I mean, I've been involved in the mental health space now for 15 years or more, helping support employees. We used to support the staff of universities, and it always felt that actually the ones that needed the support more than anyone was the students. And whilst they may have had counsellors on site, typically they would have two or three counsellors for a day a week, which would be, let's say, around 15 to 20 sessions of availability. So to get support, it could take them weeks before they got to see someone. And I always felt that actually they are our future, and they're the future of our businesses, and they need the support today to make sure that they're in the best mental health state as they go into their adult life and when they're looking for jobs and their careers. So we met with IPS, Robert Powell, who was already providing a prepaid card. It's an app, but let's call it a prepaid card called iPay, whereby the parents load money onto the card to provide services for their children through the course of their term. That might be to buy books, for extracurricular activities, for food, but it's very specific. I mean, like, they can't take money out and go to the pub, for example. So talking to Robert, we said, well, why can't we add therapy and mental health support services? And he thought it was a terrific idea. So now the parents know that they have access to therapy. It's confidential. The parents may not know that the students are using the service, but at least they have some peace of mind that if the child is finding life difficult, they have access to support. It's also worth mentioning that this service is available to the parents as well, because it's an anxious time for them when the children are away and it may be the first time they've been away. It was a no-brainer, really, that now we can actually give the students the support they want. It's now affordable because the parents are paying. It's a budget. They can have access to service, not just through term time, but it's all year round, through the night.
And you're also, in a way, making the process a bit easier, because I know when you're struggling with your mental well-being and you're needing that support, it's really hard to reach out and say, hey, I need some help. And this is, in a way, simplifying the process.
Yeah, exactly. They don't have to share their feelings with anyone, because that can be difficult for them. It's very brave to talk about your mental health. It's a brave thing to do. And it's brave to pick up the phone to talk to someone. But when they do, we're in a position to get them support straight away, almost immediately, if they're available. They can book as well and schedule something. So they now know that the only person that's actually going to hear about their trials and their troubles is a fully qualified therapist who spent 5 or 7 years qualifying to deliver the service. So their conversation is only shared between the two of them.
So what sort of sessions do you offer? What can the students access, and the parents as well, as you said?
Typically, a qualified therapist would suggest that a 50-minute session is the right length of time, because they can kind of delve a little bit deeper and find out more about the issues. But we also offer a 30-minute session. So normally we would expect the student or the parents to have a 50-minute session. But that doesn't mean to say they can't access the service as often as they would like and have a shorter one. And of course, they're always talking to the same therapist, so they're in tune with each other. But they can also buy a pack. Don't like to talk commercially about things like this particularly, but you know, if they want to make it a little bit cheaper or inexpensive, is probably the better word, then they can buy a pack of sessions as well.
So where can we find more information about Mindspace, and where is the card available currently in the UK?
Currently, there are 47 colleges who have the card. So the college issue those to the students. Now, it's up to the parents to decide on whether they want to load money on it. It's not an automatic thing. I believe many of the students are using these through the 47 different colleges. If they want to find out more about the services, IPS software, forgive me, I can't remember their website address. They have details of the card on there and what other services are available. And if they want to find more about Mindspace 247, then we have a section for students on our website, which is www.mindspace247.com.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much for talking about Mindspace 24/7 today, Guy. And I'm really happy we're opening up this avenue to more kids and getting this dialogue about mental health started.
Well, it's my pleasure. And, you know, I think the important thing for Mindspace and myself is that if we can help just one person improve their mental health, or dare we say it, save their life, because that can be where it leads, then we're doing the right thing.
Guy Outram, co-founder of Mindspace 24/7, thank you for talking on the Happy Hour today.
Thank you very much.
And that address for IPS Limited is ips.software. You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio.
Something has to make you run. Don't know why I didn't call. My feel as empty as a drum. I don't know why I didn't call. My don't know why I didn't call. I don't know why I didn't call.
And that's us at the end of today's Happy Hour show. Thank you so much for keeping us company. And before we leave, we have one final thing for you. It's time for our music therapy moment.
Yes, and sharing a song that means a lot to her, we're going to return to Charlotte, Melbourne.
Now, obviously, we ask our guests to share their music therapy moment, but if you'd like to share a track that has a special place in your heart, or maybe it's one that always cheers you up or tied to a special memory, you can let us know and take over the segment on a future episode.
Yeah, so if you'd like to do just that, email us, it's radio@rnib.org.uk. We're also on social media, Twitter @RNIB Radio, or on Facebook as RNIB Connect Radio.
Now it's time for us to go. We'll leave you with Charlotte and see you on the next episode of the Happy Hour.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Charlotte, and a song that's special to me is Harder We Fall by Jessie J.
So whatever path we choose to take, there will be highs and there will be lows.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips, and our chat, just catch the full show plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. And we have new episodes every other week. But for now, I hope you enjoyed the Happy Hour podcast, and we'll see you on the next episode.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.